ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 2, based on the translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, which I don't have in front of me right now. Dharma projita kaitavatra paramo nirmat saranam satam vidyam vastavam atravastu shivadang tapatrayon mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite King Vaparairishvara Sadhyo Hridiyavarudhyate Kritibi Susru Shibis Takshanat. Completely rejecting all religious principles which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth. Got it. Well done. Yeah. This Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God-realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. In the lecture I gave on this verse in Lika, I gave an introduction to the verse and explained somewhat the concept of dharma. In this verse, which we just recited, the declaration is that cheating dharma is rejected. And the actual truth, the substantive reality, is described. That substantive reality is the satyam param, the highest truth, which is described in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the second verse we're reading. So then the question may arise, well, if there's highest truth, that suggests there are lower truths also. So if something is true, how can it be not true? You say the highest truth, that suggests it's fully true, and something which is not the highest truth is true but not fully true. Well, that's true. There are relative truths. Just like, for instance, today is a warm day. Who would deny it? It's true, isn't it? Well, if a resident of the sun planet came here, he might think it's too cold. So it is a relative truth that today is a warm day. In fact, the whole concept of day is relative to that of night. All time is relative to the movements of the planets. Is that right? Don't say anything untrue here. So, Mr. Einstein propagated, of course he wasn't the first, but he was the first in the so-called scientific world to propagate the idea that everything is relative to everything else. But that the fixed absolute, which is not dependent upon anything else, or is not defined in terms of anything else, is the supreme truth. If we ask someone, what is your name? What's a good Croatian name? Horivi, something like that. That's your... Horivi, something like that. Okay, well that's only relative, because that's some label which was stuck on that body, which was identified with that body to distinguish it from other non-Horivi bodies. So if someone says, my name is Hrvoje, and what's a good Croatian second name? You can give your name. Hmm? You're a good Croatian, right?
Yeah.
No, a family name.
Horvat.
Hrvoje Horvat, okay. So if we say, my name is Hrvoje Horvat, and I am Croatian. This is my, yeah. And this is my wife, and she's also a good Croatian. Not a trace of Serbian blood in her. And these are our Croatian children. And we live in Croatia. So, it's all true. And Hrvoje Horvat is convinced that this is true. However, it's not a fixed reality. Because one sad day will come when Hrvoje Horvat will be taken to a Croatian graveyard. And there may come a day, say it not, when Croatia ceases to exist as a country. It may become part of Yugoslavia. Whoops, that's enough to get me put in prison, if not shot. But it's true! So, that which is true in the truest sense is always true. That Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always true in all times, places, and circumstances. That he doesn't depend on anyone else or anything else to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead is also a fact that is ever unchanging. As Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, the yogis, they do meditation in order to attempt to become God, which is a stupid proposition in the very first place. But Krishna, even while apparently a helpless baby on the lap of his mother Yashoda, was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And although appearing helpless, he very easily killed the demoness Putana, who was unconquerable even by the great demigods. So the Param Satyam is the what we call the absolute truth, that which is not dependent on anything else to be true. And Dharma, the meaning of that is that the root characteristic of any object or phenomena. So the Dharma for every living being is to serve. And the Param Dharma, the supreme Dharma for every living being, which is described later, Savaipung Sangparol Dharma, is to serve the Supreme Truth, Krishna. And anything else apart from that is not Dharma in the truest sense of the term. I am Croatian, therefore it is my duty to serve Croatia. This is a temporary dharma, and therefore a temporary duty, and it's not really a duty at all. It's a duty based on illusion. Because a relative truth, means if it's not fully true, it means there's always an admixture of falsity. And the supreme truth is the supreme pure. If there's any trace of falsity, impurity, one is not actually qualified to serve the Supreme Truth. So dharma in this world means the process, of course that may be defined in many ways, but one way of defining it is the process by which we re-establish our serving position, service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Truth. That is also called yoga. Now, dharma is, at the lower levels, it's cheating. It actually cheats the jiva into getting onto the path which eventually leads him to Krishna consciousness. But in the beginning, he's not aware of that and doesn't want to be aware of it. The offer of following religious processes and getting the fruit of going to the heavenly planets is very attractive for the foolish, envious conditioned souls. That is not the actual aim of the Vedic injunctions. The actual aim is to bring people to the platform of Krishna consciousness. But because they're not willing to do so, it offers them a material bait, which, although it's materialistic, it helps them to start on the path toward Krishna consciousness. Dharma, as observed in this world, or worldly dharma, we can say very simply, it inculcates a beginning sense of selflessness. This Srimad Bhagavatam is understandable by nirmatsaranam satam. Persons who are situated on the platform of sat and who are free from envy. The perverted tendency of the jiva, that means the natural tendency which has become perverted, the natural serving tendency, service to Krishna has become perverted, so then that instead there is a tendency to exploit others. It's just the opposite. When this tendency to exploit is not regulated by the Vedic directions, then those persons are called demons. So the Vedic directions tell us that be good, serve the brahmanas, serve the parents, serve people in general, dig wells so people can get water, plant trees along the road so that people can get shade when they're walking. And by doing so, you will be benefited. You will get the result of going to the heavenly planets. For instance, go to holy places. You will get a great pious result. So these holy places are in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So those who go there seeking a pious result so that they can enjoy material happiness, they get a touch of bhakti by going there. So the Vedic path is meant to lift one to bhakti. However, dharmasvanushtita pungsang vishvaksena katasu yaha not padayad yadiratim shrama evahi kevalam. If despite performing so many activities of dharma, one does not come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, then all his activities are in vain. Shrama eva hi kevalam, just it's work without any tangible or substantial result. So it may be that here in particular it's said that if one does not gain a taste for hearing about Krishna, then it's all useless. So in the in dharma there is, or in karma kanda, and in Jnana Kanda also, there is certainly a touch of bhakti. In Karma Kanda, one is enjoined especially to perform yajnas, sacrifices. So in that there must be, in yajna there must be worship of the yajnapati, yajyesh, yajnabhuk. That means Krishna, who is the lord of and the enjoyer of sacrifices, of Lord Vishnu. And one is... even in the Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda, often we'll find that people are chanting Vishnu Sahasranam and other names of Vishnu. We find in the Panchopasana system, expounded by Sripad Shankaracharya, the worship of five gods. One of the five gods is Vishnu. The worship of Vishnu is there. Vishnu is worshipped especially with the idea of gaining relief from sins, because it's understood that by pronouncing the name of Vishnu, one is freed from sins. So in all the Vedic culture, there is, at all levels, there is worship of Vishnu. But if one does not gain a taste for hearing the messages of Krishna consciousness, still it's considered a waste of time. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya rejected Vanashamacharavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Aradhyate Panta Nanyatato Shakaranam. When the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Rai, suggested to him that this verse from Vishnu Purana, that worship of Lord Vishnu through following Varnashram, that is the goal of life and the means to attain it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected it as external. Because there's no actual endeavor to understand Krishna as he is. It's approaching Krishna with what can I get from him? Not in an attitude of wanting to understand him from devotees. So, bhakti begins with hearing from devotees. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this proposition, bhakti, that bhakti begins with hearing about Krishna. Sthane, and how hearing? We're in a humble mood. Jnane prayasa mudapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam sthane stita shutigatang tanuvang manobhya ye prayasho api jititopi apitai strilokyam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jnane prayasam udapasya, completely rejecting the process of jnana. Now, jnana is the step above karma on the dharmic ladder. So, jnane prayasam udapasya, the attempt to attain the Supreme by the path of knowledge that is fully rejected, that is parallel to the statement here, dharma pujhita kaitava, rejection of cheating religion. And another condition, namanta eva, one should bow down, one should be humble. And jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiyavartam, one should live by hearing about Krishna. That should be the goal of one's life. Jivasya tattva jignyasa. One should live for the sake of understanding the truth. So it's in the karma kanda and jnana kanda, there may be occasional hearing about Vishnu. But in the bhakti marg, hearing about Vishnu is not just it's not a naimitic dharma. It's not an occasional practice, but it is nitya dharma. It is regular practice. Nityang Bhagavata Sevaya. It is a regular practice. Then one may remain in one's position, but dedicating one's mind, body, and words in the service of Krishna, one should live one's life, and if one does so, then he can conquer the unconquerable, namely Krishna. So there is... Dharma is defined in this world according to one's position. As a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or woman. But actual dharma, the dharma of the soul, is Atma dharma, which is also called Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. Anything else but Shuddha Bhakti is extraneous to the actual interest of the performer.
Extraneous?
External. And therefore, from the perspective of the of Param Dharma, the Supreme Dharma, it's all useless. And therefore it is cheating. Everyone in the material world is cheating themselves and cheating others. The Vedas offer a cheating path because the conditioned souls don't know anything but that. But it's meant to wean them to the actual path. Wean. Do you know what this word wean means? You could say that, yeah. It actually means when a baby is breastfeeding and then you gradually give them solid food and then they gradually take a little more solid food and less milk and gradually they eat only solid food. So it means a process. It means a process of gradually bringing them from one stage to another. And at each stage, you'll find in the Shastra that describes it, is described that this is the best. So it requires a person to be Brahma Jignyasa, to actually be eager to know the truth, to get through this whole forest of Vedic injunctions. As is often said, Hinduism is very confusing. Well, of course, we're not propagating Hinduism, per se, but that complex culture that's described in Shastra is the forerunner of the present Hindu mishmash. Khichdi is a word. That's another word. Khichdi means there's some kind of basic recipe, but it's highly flexible, and there's all kinds of things in there. And if you don't know how to cook it properly, well, it's not so tasty or nourishing. So modern Hinduism is badly cooked khichdi. So it's complex because there are so many different injunctions for different people at different levels. And often Western so-called thinkers who approach the Bhagavad Gita and different, or try to understand the Vedic culture, say it's just all contradictory. What is this Bhagavad Gita? First of all, it says, no, you shouldn't give up your dharma under any circumstances. And then it says to give up all dharmas. It's just contradictory. It doesn't make any sense. It's just a linear way of thinking. It just comes out of the so-called scientific thinking. It's just a development from the dogmatic Christian way of thinking, that Jesus is the only way, and then it becomes science is the only way, and they can't think in multiple layers. That Karma Kanda is the best and only way is true for certain persons who are at that level. Without encouraging them to follow it, unless they think I'm on the best path, then they won't follow it. And they're not at a level where they're ready to go to a higher path. So if they don't follow that at the level of Karma Kanda, then they'll just become vikarmis, sinful. So it's true when it's stated that there's no better, you'll find in Mahabharata, one after the other, there's no better charity than giving food, and then you'll find after that there's no better charity than giving knowledge, and one after another, there's all, and each time it said this is the highest charity. So those who are seeking after the truth, Brahma Jignyasa, then they can, from that highest platform, they can see how these relative truths and how they all fit into the pattern. But, nevertheless, even though these are steps, or meant to be steps on the path to the highest reality, if one simply remains in the interim position, then he's cheated because he didn't really get what he's meant to be getting. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the declaration that everything except this approach to the Param Satya is all simply cheating. Anything but pure devotional service to Krishna is simply a diversion for the conditioned soul. Vyasadeva is in effect saying that up to now, I've cheated you all in all everything I wrote. Everything I've presented as Veda, as knowledge, but it's not really knowledge. This is really knowledge. So, everything which goes on in the name of dharma, in the name of religion, is all cheating. Everything that goes on in the name of compassion, love, welfare work, charity, and so on and so on, it's all cheating. Everything that goes on in the name of art, entertainment, science, intellectual development, it's all cheating. Art, science, entertainment, intellectual development, everything that goes on in the name of social welfare, nation building, humanitarianism, It's all cheating. Everything that goes on in the name of religion is also cheating if it is not clearly directed toward the supreme truth, personality of Godhead, Krishna. If it's not clearly understood that we are all eternal servants of Krishna and meant for his pleasure only, anything else but this is simply cheating. This is certainly very difficult for most people to accept, but if seen from the platform of actual reality, it's a fact. Because we are attached to considering anything else, but because we are attached to considering all other things except pure devotional service to Krishna as being valuable and real, therefore we find difficulty to accept this. This is why Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that if all the libraries, all the books in the world were to vanish and only Srimad Bhagavatam remained, there wouldn't be any great loss to the world. And we could add to that and say maybe it would be a great benefit to the world. Because there's so everything else that goes on in the name of knowledge is simply confusing everyone. So, yes, this won't be very palatable or acceptable to most people. But persons who are concerned about the... who are actually objective truth-seekers, they will accept this. Such persons are nirmatsaranam satam, non-envious devotees. And I'll talk about those words the next time I have an opportunity to do so. But I've just discussed about Kaitava dharma, cheating dharma. Now you may say, well, how can dharma be cheating? The answer is it can't be. Actual dharma cannot be cheating because dharma means service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in this context, it means that which is a semblance of dharma. Just like we say, a false guru. If one is a guru, then he's not false. If he's false, he's not a guru. If we say bogus guru, that means someone who's posing as a guru, but is not really a guru at all. So when we say cheating religion, it means it's not really religion. Well, it is, that's the problem. Religion, as is understood in the world today, is an elaborate system of cheating people. Karl Marx was right. Karl Marx was right in saying that religion is the opiate of the people, but then he just offered another kind of opiate, that's all, thinking that he was giving the highest truth. So this is speaking from the absolute platform, which is the only actual platform. On this, from the relative platform, we can say that, well, of course, it's a contestable claim, but on the whole, Christianity is better than communism. If we examine objectively, historically, that might be questionable. Probably a lot more people have been killed in the name of Christianity than they have in the name of communism. But from the absolute, bringing in the absolute platform again, we can see that for persons who are raised in a Christian atmosphere are better, in general, better prospects. The culture is better for taking to Krishna consciousness than those who are staunchly communist. In general, we can say that. And even we can see that in general, persons from a Roman Catholic-based culture are, in general, better candidates for taking to Krishna consciousness than those from a Protestant culture. So, we can say that one is relatively better than the other. And we can say that, to be an average Christian is better than being an average, for instance, Nazi. Or an average Hell's Angel, or something like that. And we can say that it's better to be, in general, it's better to be a law-abiding citizen than a criminal. It's better not to be a drug addict than to be a drug addict. So all these statements are true, But nevertheless, unless, for, even if one is a good citizen and a good Catholic, and if one doesn't come to the point of Krishna consciousness, then all their endeavors don't bring them to the actual point. If they maintain the concept that, well, religion is something to help me enjoy eternally, and they have no understanding of how we are meant for the service of Krishna, or who is Krishna, then they maintain the envious and envious and enjoying mentality. And even persons who are advertised as great saints and welfare workers, if we examine from the Bhagavata platform, we'll find that they are not free of the envious and enjoying mentality. So this is all highly revolutionary and controversial topics, these are. Because what's being said is that everything in this world is useless unless one takes to pure devotional service. Prabhupada, when he was in Hamburg in about 1969, I think it was, he had a long conversation with a German Sanskrit professor. They were speaking together in Sanskrit. And Prabhupada's disciple, Shivananda, was present, and he didn't understand Sanskrit. So obviously this German professor had knowledge of Vedic Dharma, and to some extent to be able to converse with Prabhupada. So Shivananda Prabhu related that, and after a long discussion, the professor said in English, "So what you are saying is that everything I've learned is useless." And Prabhupada said, "Yes," in English. So it's a bitter pill to swallow for those who are accustomed to cheating. To cheating others and being cheated by others. And it might sound like dogmatism. Just like Jesus is the only way. Not only is Jesus the only way, but our church is the only way. Unless you belong to the United Reformed Methodist Lutheran Baptist smorgasbord, no, it's not smorgasbord, our fanatical Church of Christ, then you're doomed to burn in hell forever. With everyone else in the world except our 73 members. Because this is the way. Anyway, you can make up your own adjectives. This is all from Protestantism. I don't even know. It's probably impossible. I don't know if you can even blend Methodist and Lutheran. I'm not that much into the schisms. I don't know that much about schismatic Protestantism. So it may appear to be dogmatic, but Bhagavatam is presented non-dogmatically. If we examine the description of this supreme truth, who can deny that there is any truth higher than this? Just like Srila Prabhupada would often say when people said to him that no one can know God. Sometimes people would say this to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada would say, "Well, I know. Krishna is God." You say, "Well," then they'd say, "Well, how can you say that?" Prabhupada would say, "Here is Krishna. We are describing Krishna. If you can present anyone who has the qualities of God more than Krishna, then we'll accept. But if you can't, then you should accept." So it is not some dogmatic, fanatical banging on the table, "Krishna is God, you have to accept it." But no, you study, you use your intelligence. If we accept that there is the Supreme Being, then certainly he must have these qualities. All these qualities which are described in the first verse of Bhagavatam, and many qualities which are to be described in the rest of Bhagavatam, they must certainly be present in the Supreme Truth. Otherwise he's not the Supreme Truth at all. And actual religion means to know that Supreme Truth and act in relationship with him. And anything but else but that is not actually for the benefit of the jiva. Therefore it is completely rejected from Bhagavatam. And I'll finish there. Looks like it's time for prasadam. The heads are going down. So to get them up again, we need the word prasadam. It's a good way, if you want to wake devotees up in the morning, you don't have to shout, just say prasadam, and they'll wake up. It's the guaranteed way to... This is bhakti yoga, linking people with the absolute truth. It's called Anna Brahma. It's described in Shastra. Anna Brahma, the supreme truth in the form of food. Right. Okay, everyone agrees? All right. Jai, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Oh, there's a question. There is a question. Someone's interested. Okay. Jai, thank you very much. These are all big topics. Little bit, I'm only describing little bit about everything.
Conditional nature, we heard from Srila Prabhupada that it's impossible in one life to finish. But there is a statement also, I heard, I don't know, because you write in the book about Bhakti Siddhanta.
Yeah, I gave a statement. I gave a statement that was supposed to have been said by Bhakti Siddhanta, but I never found any. It's such that it takes three lives.
Yeah.
But important statement. I can't find exactly the word that I tried, I researched it, but I couldn't find any such statement. So I didn't include it in my book.
Mm-hmm.
There's no record. I don't know. Jyoti Shekhar Prabhu told me this, but I can't find. With such a statement, you don't want to put it in the book unless you really, unless it's a heavy theological statement. But I didn't find anything to back it up, so I didn't put it in the book. That's one reason why the book's not out after 23 years, because, there's a lot of work. Well, I didn't say that thing, one life you're Kanishtha Adhikai, next life Madhyam Adhikai, next life Uttam Adhikai. Seems like someone's added some more speculation to the speculation. Is it? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah, you heard it like that. Yeah.
One life you're practicing,
this is how.
If you're practicing by completely devotion service, you cannot complete. If you're Kanishtha, you cannot.
In the next life, you're a Madhyamadhikari.
Yeah.
All right.
We heard.
Well,
We heard also that if you chant, probably stated. If you chant Nama Dasa, if you chant like a purely for then you in one life you can get. Liberation. I mean, you can go
Krishna praying. Yeah.
If you chant with Namabhasa, then you need two lifetimes. If you chant with Namaprada, then you need three lifetimes. Today morning we heard that in the class. Richard, then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
Well, I'm not aware of him saying. He might have said it. This is. This is how cheating religion develops. Someone says something, someone says, changes it a little bit, adds a little bit, throws a little spice into the kichari. But we can understand that even if such statements are there, they can only be indicative at best. I'm not aware of such statements, but they're only indicative. They give an indication. They're general statements. Yeah, generalization. Because, we have heard from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that Bahu Janma Kare Jodi Shravan Kirtan Tobutana Pai Krishna Pade Prendan. If you make offenses, it's for three lifetimes, no way. You can go many lifetimes and you still won't get Krishna Prem. So that sounds, throw that one in the bin right away. That's speculation. And in one life you're Kanishtha Adhikari, next life Madhyam. No, it depends on your level of intensity and your endeavor. You can progress from Kanishtha to Uttam in this life, or it may take many lifetimes. Otherwise, it's not just some kind of mechanical. It's like this idea, you chant 1,000 times Radha Sahasranam or something, and then you get Radha Prem. Like it's some kind of mechanical process, but it's not. Well, I'm just saying. But this is actually even in the realm of bhakti, there's an admixture there of cheating religion, because it's for people who haven't accepted those who haven't understood the nature of bhakti. Then they'll be attracted by such things that you You go to Vrindavan and you just live there and then you'll just get Shuddha Bhakti just by going there. But we see there are so many cheetahs and you know, murderers and all kinds of people living in Vrindavan. They're not exhibiting any of the symptoms of Shuddha Bhakti. So, one idea. So the acharyas have clarified all such statements by saying that you can't actually enter Vrindavan at all unless you become purified of material desires. So along with hearing Bhagavatam, we have to hear Bhagavatam from pure devotees who know the purport. Otherwise we'll get, you know, if we hear Bhagavatam described by people who are not Bhagavatas, who don't have the current of pure devotion, then it'll come out in a different way. Bhaktya Bhagavata Grahya, that is, what is that? Aham Vedmi Shuko Veti Vyasa Veti Na Veti Vab. Bhaktya Bhagavata Grahya Na Nartika, na medhaya nartikaya. That I know, Lord Shiva says, Shukadev Goswami knows, and maybe Vyasa knows, and maybe he doesn't. What is the purport of Bhagavatam?
How he knows, who is the first?
Lord Shiva.
Shukadev does not.
Bhagavatam is understandable through bhakti. Not through intelligence, nor merely by studying the commentaries. Now this is interesting because the original version of this verse is a little different. Oh, now we're going off on another tangent. It's an interesting one. The original version of the verse is Aham Vedmi Shuko Veti Vyasa Veti Na Veti Va Shridharam Sakalam Veti Shri Nrisimha Prasadana. The original version is that I know, Shukadev knows, maybe Vyasadev knows, Shridhar, he certainly knows, the commentator on Bhagavatam. He knows everything by the mercy of Nrisimhadev, who's his Ishtadev, his worshipable deity, worshipable Lord. So this was pronounced by Lord Shiva in Varanasi. I believe when the veracity of Sridhar Swami's commentary, I believe, on Bhagavad Gita was questioned. And they brought the pundits couldn't work it out, so they brought it to Lord Shiva. And exactly how he gave this pronunciation, I don't know, but that's the conclusion. The point is that the Bhagavat, the Shastra has to be understood through the Acharyas, who give their understanding by writing. They put it in, but even that can be misconstrued, so therefore we have to hear from Acharyas. All right, so we'll finish. Yeah, and then the question comes, how come Vyasadeva doesn't know? That's the next question. Common question after that, citing that. Yeah.
There? I just short one. Yeah. So like you said, that only Shuddha Bhakti can really fulfill the jiva, soul. So the residents of Vaikuntha, because we often hear that residents of Vaikuntha, they don't have such a...
The residents of Vaikuntha, they have pure bhakti, but it's not as developed as that of Golok Vrindavan. That is on the platform of rasa vichar, of understanding rasa, but we can't say there's any impure desire in their heart. It's just that their bhakti is not it's not manifest on that. It's very difficult to use the words of this world to describe that, because there's the tendency to think that it's something, when we say it's not as on the same level but as the residents of Goloka, but still it's not that there's any imperfection in it. But from the perspective of the residents of Vrindavan, Vaikuntha is, you know, just some, no interest in it whatsoever. Or very little, which is inconceivable. Raghunath Das, he warns of getting thrown down to Vaikuntha. Raghunath Das. So anyway, we're in the world of Kunta. We're in this little pea pod or mustard seed floating around somewhere in the garbage can. So it's better not to try to understand with our limited intelligence that which is unlimited. Don't try to bring the measuring rod there.
It's just connected to this.
Yeah, yeah.
We once asked Gopi Parananda Prabhu a similar question. And if you can just give a small comment on his answer.
Yeah.
His answer was, when Narayan Krishna, when he produces jivas, unlimited, he's making according to his rasa, so that those jivas in Vaikuntha, Narayana, he likes their rasa, so they make to satisfy Krishna in that moment. It's very interesting. So this, their perfection and Krishna.
Yeah, he's the supreme enjoyer. He enjoys in many forms.
There is even possibility to advance more from Vaikuntha to Goloka.
There is. It's unusual, but it's not impossible.
I didn't manage to translate everything.
All right.
No need for translation.
Without getting mercy, we can't understand. You can translate if you want, huh?
First, I have short kirtan.
Okay, have a short kirtan. Although we've been having kirtan, there's also kirtan. Yeah.
Can I have one more question?
What's the general consensus? Okay, ask. We'll bypass Vox Populi.
I just wanted to ask you that you can clarify me. That you were talking in.
I can clarify to you. Maybe.
You were talking at the beginning of the lecture.
Clarify you means I'd make you your whole body clear, see through. See through. Yeah. Anyway, don't mind. You speak much better English than I speak Croatian. That's for sure.
Maybe I can speak on Croatian.
So yeah, maybe a good idea.
You said in the beginning of the lecture that we should go to holy places. But it is also said that when pure devotee comes somewhere, that place also becomes holy place. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, that's stated in Bhagavatam. What's that verse? Tirtha Bhuta, Tirtha Kurvanti Tirthani. The pure devotees, they make the tirthas into tirthas. Yeah, because otherwise the atmosphere is materialistic. I mean, there's so many materialistic people going there. And even though it's a place of the Supreme Lord, their attitude is so materialistic that it becomes materialistic. And we find that in many holy places, in many religious traditions, that many people are turned off by the materialistic atmosphere. There's so many people selling, icons and stickers and, and so many peddlers that people get turned. You can go and look at all the things, but there's no one to give you a spiritual experience. So when the pure devotees come, they restore the spiritual atmosphere for those who are interested to take advantage of it. Even Vrindavan and Mayapur, before Prabhupada established ISKCON, there's a lot of difference. Mayapur, every Gaur Purnima, there were just, how many mats were there? There was the Chaitanya Math Jogapita and Srivasangan, that's like one. And then there was Madhav Maharaj's Math and Goswami Maharaj's Math, and I'm not sure if that Bharti Maharaj's Math was established at that time or not. Anyway, there were three or four Maths, and every Gaur Purnima, each of them, 200-300 widows would come from Calcutta and they'd have a little parikrama, and that was it, and it was dead. No one was joining. Now the whole road all the way up from the cart up to Jogpit, it's all full of mats. And so people have joined. It's all an overspill from Prabhupada's preaching. And that was noted in a book by one mundane scholar that after the arrival of ISKCON in Vrindavan, it's had its influence in as much as among the residents of Vrindavan, there's more social status if you have more bhakti nowadays. Like having bhakti is considered something important, which previously it wasn't.